Welcome back to Through the Word. I'm your host, Peyton Jones, and today we'll be going on our journey through 1 Chronicles chapter 19. If you Google the word Ammonites, you'll get the Ammonites were marine animals belonging to the phylum Mollusca and the class Cephalopoda. Okay, so David didn't have personal beefs with sea creatures of the Nautilus family. It's not those Ammonites that we're talking about. No, the Ammonites that we're talking about today are people north of Israel who were notorious pagans. In fact, when Solomon takes an Ammonite wife, she introduces Israel to pagan worship and influences Solomon to allow pagan worship into Israel. Now, the Ammonites were known to be extremely barbaric in their practices, gouging out the right eyes of all the soldiers of armies they made a treaty with so they could never rise up again. They were also known, and this is kind of gross, for ripping babies out of pregnant women when they conquered lands to prevent the people from reproducing. And this is found in Amos chapter 1, verse 13. You could say that the Ammonites weren't great enemies or neighbors. The Ammonites were descended from Lot, and God told them in Deuteronomy chapter 2, verse 19, "And when you approach the territory of the people of Ammon, do not harass them or contend with them, for I will not give you any of the land of the people of Ammon as a possession, because I have given it to the sons of Lot for a possession." They later, by the way, the Ammonites, mixed in with the Arabic peoples and were absorbed. Nevertheless, God kept his promise that their ancestors would inhabit that land, and they do until today. The problem was that the Arameans, or what we would call today Syrians, used to be called in to help the Ammonites, so rather than fighting one army, David finds himself fighting against an alliance of two armies. And this chapter is about David breaking that alliance to the point where he could simply take them out one by one. Now, David breaks the Syrians in this chapter and makes them subject to him. They cry uncle, and David reigns supreme. We are told that the way it worked was that when one enemy started to be defeated, the other enemy fled. We read in verse 10, Joab, that was David's general, saw that there were battle lines in front of him and behind him. So he selected some of the best troops in Israel and deployed them against the Arameans. He put the rest of the men under the command of Abishai, his brother, and they were deployed against the Ammonites. Joab said, "If the Ammonites are too strong for me, then you are to rescue me. But if the Ammonites are too strong for you, then I will rescue you. Be strong and let us fight bravely for our people and the cities of our God. The Lord will do what is good in his sight." Now, this is a lot like what it looks like in your life when one tyrant is broken. The other one begins to crumble and it begins to not look so tough. Last chapter, we talked about the bullies in your life, the sin that might be beating you up and keeping you in the corner and on the ropes, like a boxer, like Mike Tyson that seems undefeatable. Oh, wait a second. It's in the 90s anymore. Yeah, the 80s and the 90s, Mike Tyson seemed unbeatable, but one day he got a little overconfident, didn't train as hard, and one-hit Mike went down for the count. I can remember feeling like my anger was the undefeatable giant like Mike Tyson or Goliath. I was an angry kid raised in an angry home. I'd grown up abused and my anger would unleash when I felt provoked. I felt like I had no power or control over it, and there seemed to be no middle ground. I was either keeping it all in, trying to hold things together, or I was breaking things and yelling obscenities. Not very Christian-like. But when this entered into the early days of my marriage, I knew that I needed to get this under control. It was different now. I lived in the house with a girl I loved, but the problem was I would still lose my temper, and I just couldn't seem to beat it. Now, people can be addicted to almost anything. I could be a rageaholic, a pornography addict. I can be an alcoholic, a workaholic. You see, that's what sin does. Sin starts out as an action. Actually, before that, it becomes a thought that becomes an action. Then, once that action is done often enough, neuroscientists tell us that it becomes a habit. And once it becomes a habit, it becomes a lifestyle. The point of this chapter is you don't have to take all of your sin at one time. You can choose your battles like David did and go after one enemy at a time, one bully at a time, and break the alliance that sin has over your life. Maybe it's not just anger or pornography or whatever it is. Maybe it's all of the above. If you've ever watched an MMA fighter get choked out, you may think that the chokeout just cuts the brain off. And that's true. But what also happens in the process is that the muscles get weaker the longer the stranglehold happens, because it's not just the oxygen to the brain cut off, but also the muscles. So the victim is unable to free themselves as they're getting choked out because their muscle tissues aren't getting the oxygen. Well, when you begin to loosen the grips of the stranglehold of sin on you, you begin to be able to breathe again. And you find your strength return little by little as the oxygenated Holy Spirit begins to animate and revive those tissues, and you regain your strength. The start of freeing yourself, according to people that work with addiction, is number one, determination. That's when an addict hits what's called rock bottom. The addict determines that the condition of suffering under the addiction is worse than the pain of fighting it. You see, we don't like to fight. We don't like to wrestle. We'd rather take the slight comfort that sin offers us, the pleasure, the escape. But soon that escape becomes the prison itself. Israel was probably used to the rhythms and waves of attacks from their oppressors. And here comes David, like Jesus, to break the cycle. You see, the pain of fighting sin and going to war is less than the greater pain of being subdued and helpless. And that's what David and the armies of Israel felt in this chapter. And believer, you're not helpless. I thought I was helpless, and in a sense, on my own, I was, by myself. But you and God, did you know that you're the most powerful army of two the world has ever seen? This is why it says, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. When you resist sin, you're refusing to yield to the flesh, and the spirit comes rushing in like that oxygenated blood to fill that vacuum. When the enemy sees the spirit being yielded to, he flees, because you're going to go on the offense, not just the defense. And Satan is afraid of the Holy Spirit. The Spirit was given to empower the believer after Jesus defeated Satan at the cross. You see, the Spirit is a reminder of what Jesus did for you, and more importantly, what he can do in you. Satan is powerless against the Holy Spirit, and you, my friends, get to be the referee determining who's going to fight and by what rules in the battle of sin. If you let the Spirit in to face the enemy, you'll still get hit, you'll still get some bruises and scrapes and get knocked out, but here's the thing about a fight, there's not just one round. With the more rounds you resist and win, the more the enemy is going to flee. And once you've defeated one sin in your life, like this chapter, one enemy, you'll begin to see the other one is not invincible either. They will begin to flee like these armies. Like David's army, you'll find by the Spirit of God, you'll break the ranks and lead out to divide and conquer.
Join us next time on Through the Word as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. Our apps are free, so tell a friend. We're listener supported, so thanks for giving. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.